Karen Tallien quits the race for governor. Will John Gregg be the only Democrat? John Dickerson enters the race for U.S. Senate. Will he pose a challenge to Barron Hill? Joe Donnelly supports the Iran nuclear deal. Jared Fogle is headed to prison. And Carmel considers gay rights protections. That, plus the Indiana family that cleaned the chimneys at the White House, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending August 21, 2015.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.
This week, State Senator Karen Tallien ended her campaign for governor. Following Glenda Ritz, she is the second Democrat to quit the race. Tallien says she had no choice but to drop out after John Gregg was endorsed by the AFL-CIO. Her decision leaves Gregg as the only Democrat left in the race and the likely 2016 Democratic nominee for governor. Tom Sugar is still considering a run. Is John Gregg in the clear? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Joel Miller, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shellett. Joel Miller, was the AFL-CIO sending a message to Tom Sugar as well?
I think the AFL-CIO was sending a message to everybody that they support John Gregg, but I think that John has done a good job of consolidating nearly every Democratic base constituency that's reachable, and I think he's closed the door for just about anybody who would want to compete.
He got a steel workers endorsement this week too.
I think so, and I think auto workers are coming soon.
And it's interesting because since John Gregg began the 2016 race, he hasn't done any media. The only thing we've seen of him on video was the announcement that he put on the internet. He's busy working behind the scenes and obviously having success at it.
Well, I mean, he's out raising money. They say he's doing things differently than he did last time, that he learned from what he did wrong last time. Those were his words, not mine. So anytime you can take a situation and learn from it, that makes you a better candidate the second time around. But what's interesting about this to me is that Glenda Ritz got out after all three candidates for governor appeared before the ISTA, and they didn't endorse anybody. And if you're Glenda Ritz and the ISTA didn't endorse you, you're thinking, what do I have to do?
That's a ticket home.
Now, Tallien gets out, Senator Tallien gets out because the AFL-CIO endorses John Gregg. So clearly, the unions are driving this train, and John, of the $1.45 million, about 90% of that's union money, either state or federal union money. So clearly they're calling the shots in this particular campaign on the Democrat side, and John has done a good job of parlaying that. So he's put himself in a position where I don't see anybody challenging him at this point.
Yeah, Tom Sugar has one hope, the way I see it, and that's Evan Bayh sharing some of his money, and that's not likely, is it?
He'd have to share a lot of it. I think. Now, granted, Evan Bayh is sitting on a pretty decent amount of money.
$10 million,
give or take. And if you look at the union money and other money that came together with John Gregg in the first portion of the year, was what, $1.7 million, which is a pretty good showing. But whether Evan Bayh is willing to write a check for that amount or more, I would guess that's unlikely because of, you know, we live in a time when endorsements don't have the pack the punch they used to for the most part. But in these instances, I think that's not true because you look on the Democratic, the infrastructure, the grassroots, the volunteer support, and the money, as Mike pointed out, this is a lot of union money that went into those coffers. These endorsements did matter.
Okay, so John Gregg is going at this differently with different results this time around. But if it ends up being Mike Pence versus John Gregg, that's going to be a very different race than 2012.
Well, I think what you'll see is a much more bruising race than you saw in 2012. Remember also then we had a third candidate. I'm not sure we'll see a libertarian or an independent candidate if that's the matchup again this year. So I think you've already seen Governor Pence toughen up his rhetoric leading into this. And I think John Gregg would have to bring that same kind of heat. I think you'll see a bruising race, and it'll be a very hotly contested race.
So in a matter of a little more than a couple of weeks, the Democrats have gone from what looked like a very fractured circumstance to very close to unity. That has to be a positive development from where you sit.
It's positive. It's not typical in the Democratic Party. But I think part of what's driving this is that John Gregg is a different candidate than he was 4 years ago. He is doing things differently. He is consolidating the base and not just expecting it to fall to him. And the other piece of it is that there are a lot of new people coming into the Democratic Party, or at least coming in to the fray to be willing to vote for a Democrat because of the actions of Mike Pence for the last 2 years.
So today we learned that employment is at the highest level since 2008. The Pence administration is making much of that. He's going to run on job creation.
Well, the highest level in state history as the employment level in Indiana. And they've done a good job. They said job creation was job one. They've done that. They've kept taxes low for both individuals and for the people that hire people.
But they're already in campaign mode.
Well, sure, you have to be. I mean, anytime you're an incumbent getting ready to run for a second term, you better be by this point in the process, and they are. And I think one of the major differences, going back to your original question, is if attacked, you won't see him roll over like they did last time and decide not to answer.
And the reason these numbers are being bandied about and celebrated as a record, you know, the historical high, again, it's the soft spot that was created by the whole RFRA debate. And so this is that.
And the 20-point drop in his approval rate.
Right. Job,
but this is the attempt to inoculate against that.
Yeah, but jobs are always number one issue.
It's particularly important in this current climate in light of that development last session.
You would expect for that reason the governor to tout those numbers, and understandably so. But while it's the most jobs in the history, it's also not that we have more people living in the state than ever before. So on a percentage basis, proportionate basis, we aren't seeing the very highest levels at this point. And we still are lagging in terms of per capita income. Right. And so that has to change. If that changes, then that really strengthens the governor's hand.
All right, meantime, there is another Democrat in the race for U.S. Senate. John Dickerson announced his run for office at Shapiro's Deli. He will challenge Barron Hill for the Democratic nomination. Dickerson is a first-time candidate who is retired from the ARC of Indiana, which advocates for people with intellectual disabilities.
Too often, we are dividing ourselves by how we look, who we love, and it is wrong. We have to fight for racial and income equality. We have to protect the rights of people to love and live and marry with whoever they choose, yeah. Not some committee, yeah. Somewhere in the legislature.
Mike McDaniel, does John Dickerson have a shot at the Democratic nomination?
Yes, I think he does. I think that, first of all, John Dickerson's a good man. I've known John Dickerson a long time. His work for ARC of Indiana has been outstanding. He's been a leader for those that have disabilities for a long time in the state and has been very effective. Now, he's a political novice, and he's the first to admit that. In fact, he will make the argument that that's his biggest advantage, that he doesn't have a big record. And that may be true, because in Barron Hill's case, for instance, he was kind of a rubber stamp for everything the Obama administration wanted. And I think Dickerson plans on taking advantage of that. Plus, Barron never got along with the unions. So if Dickerson can get support from the union base in the state, yeah. Very much the way John Gregg has done, then all of a sudden John Dickerson really has a chance to get this nomination.
He's an old-fashioned liberal. And Barron's a pretty conservative Democrat.
That way.
Yeah. What do Democrats want?
We'll find out. This is the discussion that's happening in the Democratic Party nationally. This is what we're seeing with Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. So it's going to be an interesting primary. The good thing that I see is at the end, I don't see venom in this race, and therefore the winner will consolidate the base and we'll have a viable candidate going into the next election.
All right. Can Dickerson hang until the May primary?
Well, he's in an important period right now because he has to raise the money to prove that he is a viable candidate, and he has to do that pretty soon. So the answer to your question, Jim, is if he's able to raise that money from among his base supporters, not from the unions yet, not from any of the other interests, but can show that he can keep up, because Barron Hill has had a pretty decent fundraising period so far. Dickerson has to show that he can hang with that. If he can and can get forward, then he has a good shot at this, I think.
And that's the key, because Barron Hill, because of his tenure on Capitol Hill, is a known commodity. And we're not talking about just Indiana. We're talking about the deep-pocketed resources across the country.
Right.
And John Dickerson, while he may be known certainly among the constituencies with whom he's worked so effectively, seemingly, for several decades, he's not a known commodity outside the state. And to your point, that a lot of the money to seed these campaigns will come from out of state, flowing into those coffers.
Barron Hill is a retread. Dickerson's a novice. The Republicans, for us, fortunately, we have three outstanding candidates who are all being capable of raising money and doing the organization work that you have to do to be successful. So I'm very confident that we're going to keep this seat, and this is going to be very tough for the Democrats to take away from us this time around.
You agree?
No, I don't agree, and I don't think that, depending on how that Republican primary goes, I think we could end up with a Republican that's very out of step with mainstream Indiana.
2012 repeated is what you're hoping for.
I think so.
Or it could be a big, depending on how it turns out, could be an advantage for the Democrat, who would perhaps, depending on the alignment, have more middle-of-the-road appeal than, to even...
That would be 2012
to
repeated.
Go with Hillary, right. to
the 2012 winner. Joe Donnelly is backing the president on the Iran nuclear deal. He became the first Democrat who is considered a swing vote to announce that publicly this week. Republicans in Congress will call for a vote to reject the deal, and it will likely be up to Democrats to sustain a presidential veto. In the meantime, TV ads are airing in Indiana and elsewhere calling for the deal to be rejected. They were created by the American Security Initiative, a group led by former senators from both parties, including Indiana Democrat Evan Bayh. Donnelly is unfazed.
If Iran heads toward a nuclear weapon, we have no obligation. We have, no choice but to take action. And so what we're trying to do is make sure we've taken every step before that to try to make sure that they can comply and not have a nuclear weapon.
The idea that Iran is going to self-police or self-report their own nuclear program, it defies logic because it defies how Iran's behaved over the course of the last several decades. You can't trust Iran.
And that's Republican Congressman Luke Messer. John Ketzenberger, is that a surprise move from Donnelly?
I think so. I mean, he's looked at this, and he's looking at all of these issues, and here he's going to be clearly shown as siding with the president. Now, that's not something that's not happened before, but he's very cognizant, as we've seen in the past, about worrying how these play, and he's really been a swing on a lot of these issues. So I am a little surprised, especially that he's come out as early as he has, to say that he's backing the deal.
And what's interesting to me is when he cast a controversial vote on Planned Parenthood funding, he didn't announce what he was going to do until he cast the vote. In this case, he's out here early and doing TV interviews to explain the vote.
Yeah, I'm not sure I can explain necessarily the timing, but this whole scenario certainly continues to burnish his credentials as somebody who has a maverick streak or certainly an independent streak, and we've seen that. You cited two examples, and we could probably come up with a much longer list if we went back to the outset of his tenure in the Senate. But he did in these statements in the interview with Wish and in other interviews, the notion that if there is a perceived violation on the part of Iran, that he would be effectively the first to champion the charge of going over there and doing what needs to be done militarily. So it's not as if he's throwing a lot of putting all his eggs, if you will, in this basket. There's a bit of an end game that gives him some hedging.
Interesting looking at this issue from an Indiana perspective, though, because this is mostly partisan on Capitol Hill, yet you've got Dick Lugar, who's backing the president on this, and Evan Bayh, who's on the other side. How do you explain
it? And Chuck Schumer being against it. I mean, it's really...
But there are only two Democrats right. in the Senate have spoken out against it.
I was surprised at Senator Downey's vote, or saying that he's going to vote to... in support of this deal. This will not be popular with Hoosier voters. This deal will not be. And he has been willing to take some pretty difficult stands for things that I think were right in the wheelhouse of where Hoosier voters were. So this one is a real surprise, and I'm hoping that what he's not doing is calculating, you know, I'll give him this one because the president needs this one, and that probably helps me when the time comes to get the support I need. I'm hoping that he's not the kind of guy that's playing that game, because up until now, he hasn't looked like it, but he sure looks like it on this one.
But what he's saying is, I talked to Dick Lugar, and I talked to Lee Hamilton, who were both foreign...
Dick Lugar's not there.
But they're both foreign affairs experts.
And Evan Bayh is on the other side of this thing.
Right.
So, I mean, it's like, you know, what... You know, he's got to think about him, and he's got to think about where the people of Indiana are, and I think he missed it on this one.
I don't think there's any clearer voice on issues like this in Indiana than Dick Lugar and Lee Hamilton. And the fact that Senator Donnelly is in line with the beliefs of Dick Lugar and Lee Hamilton speaks volumes. The other piece is Senator Donnelly has said that this is not what he sees as the last move in this game. And the fact is that if this doesn't work, then we have other options that we have to explore. But first, we have to exhaust all of our non-military options before we consider anything else.
He basically is buying time. I mean, he's saying, I'd rather deal with this, and if he has to deal with this, or if the nation has to deal with this militarily in 2025 or 2035 as opposed to 2016.
All right. Former Subway restaurant spokesman Gerald Fogel is on home detention after agreeing to a plea deal that has destroyed his reputation. Fogel faces anywhere between 5 and 12 years in prison and possibly more, followed by home monitoring. Investigators said Fogel admitted to receiving and viewing child porn from Russell Taylor, the head of his foundation, and to repeatedly traveling from Indiana to New York to pay for sex with minors. A Florida woman, Rochelle Herman, claims she is one of the witnesses who tipped off federal authorities.
Mentioned to you that he, in fact, did have relations with underage children?
Yes, he did. And from here in the United States to when he was on his international tours and then visits to Thailand. Why would I be the only one? He had something that was compelling him inside that wanted to reveal what he was doing.
John Schwannis, America is the land of second chances. Will Jared Fogel ever get a second chance?
Well, you're right. Your premise is right. I think America loves a comeback story and is willing to forgive and forget, usually. And when you're talking about these kinds of matters and I don't know, you know, you read the research and the science behind it and these proclivities and it's, you know, people a lot smarter than I say that these are not the kind of things that you just turn a switch and say, I'm not interested now, I'm a new person. I would like to think, though, that I'm a believer in some. If you do the crime, you do the time, and then you do have an opportunity to for renewal. But because of the kinds of charges to which he pleaded guilty, I'd be surprised if this is a forgivable offense.
His wife left him. His family is distancing themselves. Subway doesn't want to talk about him. I mean, how much does this hurt the Subway restaurant chain?
Well, first, if you go back to how much Subway has grown in the period since Jared Fogel was associated with Subway, it's grown by tripled in size in that 15-year period. So I think that Subway has got some real work to do, and it's difficult work because he was such an instrumental part of their message and their marketing, and now he's not, and for the most horrible reasons possible. So I'll be curious to see how Subway tries to work through this and to recover, because it obviously is damaging its reputation and brand awareness as well.
And what police are telling us is that this all came from a single tip, and that this is a lesson that if you see something, say something. So is that the one positive we can take out of this?
Well, there's several positives I think that we can learn from this. The tip is one, but the other one is that we are aware now that even people who have a public persona of maybe being pure and good, that bad things can happen at any time and any place, and that we need to be diligent and watchful no matter what, especially where our children are concerned.
Yeah, this is it was an amazing story that turns out to be amazingly sad.
It's a tragic story, and this man is clearly sick, and I hope he gets the help he needs, but it's going to be difficult getting that help where he's going.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question: will Subway restaurants recover from the relationship with Jared Fogle? Your choices are A, yes, or B, no. Last week's question: is an Indianapolis casino a good idea? 21% said yes, 79% said no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Carmel is struggling this week with a proposed human rights ordinance. The ordinance was written by Mayor Jim Brainard. He said he wants to make sure Carmel is a welcoming place. He also said he wants to eliminate discrimination based on religious beliefs. The measure was referred to a committee at this council meeting, as some questioned the effect it would have. Here is Father Richard Doerr.
Ironically, this proposed ordinance creates a discrimination against the principled Catholic Christian business owner.
People who's maybe somebody's Jewish or Muslim, or they have a child who's gay, they experience that. And we want to say, I want to say, as a minister of the gospel of Jesus, everyone needs to be loved and cared for. And I hope that we can find a way to do that.
And that's Reverend Jerry Zaire. Joel Miller, will Carmel follow through with a human rights ordinance?
It'll be interesting to see. And we've talked today about some issues that are certainly raging inside of the political parties. And I will say that this is an issue that the Democratic Party crossed years ago. We stand on the right side of the river on this one, and the Republican Party is still struggling with it. That's a completely Republican council that's struggling with it. I don't understand why they struggle, but they do.
Well, a majority of the council co-sponsored this, but they're saying that that doesn't mean necessarily that they'll vote for it.
I totally understand why they're struggling with this. There is a debate going on here about this issue, and it's a microcosm of what I think you're going to see as we go towards the next session of the legislature. And the reason I say that is there are people who definitely want to protect religious freedom. I mean, there are those who are comparing some of these very questions about how you deal with this issue with conscientious objectors from the 60s who went to other countries because they decided on religious grounds they weren't going to participate in a war. I mean, there are people who have deep-seated beliefs that want those same protections. And so anytime you try to make sure all sides are satisfied in something as delicate as this issue is, you're going to have these kind of discussions. I'm glad they're having it in Carmel. And I do think it's typical of what you're going to see as we move forward to try to get a balance that satisfies the situation. That's going to be difficult to do.
We've seen city leaders in Goshen and Elkhart back away from similar efforts. I don't think they back away in Carmel.
I don't think necessarily they can. And I say that because Jim Brainard, who was vocal on this issue in the latter days of the legislative battle over this as well on behalf of other mayors, this is about being appearing as a welcoming, tolerant community. So now that this has come forth, it's kind of hard to dial it back and say it was proposed and then taken off the table. It, in some ways, ironically, then the cause, you're kind of further back in right. The game from when you started if you had not even addressed it or raised it at all. So I think in some ways the hand will be forced.
And this is Mike Pence's base.
Yes, it is. In the formulation that Mike was talking about, I'm not sure that in the Carmel Council you can say that necessarily. But I do think it's interesting that the mayor brought this forward because he knows exactly what he's doing. And he may also be pushing the issue because he's thinking about it from a perspective of not just a mayor but also a Republican. And I think what Joel said is right. I think he perceives that his party is struggling with this, and this might be his way of pushing it forward to try to get the issue resolved sooner than later.
Finally, John Meredith of Richmond and his son Tom recently spent a day at the White House cleaning and inspecting 7 chimneys. They include the chimney in the Oval Office. The Merediths own a company that repairs and restores chimneys. They called the White House duty, quote, an amazing experience. Mike McDaniel, is that better than being the White House plumber?
Well, I think this is a tremendous honor for anybody to be able to provide those kinds of services to the White House, and for these folks from Richmond, Indiana, to do this, because this is such a historic building, and it's so important to the American public. To be the one chosen to do this is a great honor.
And it's the second time they've been asked, so obviously they do a pretty good job. Interesting story. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Joel Miller, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanes of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shello of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.